Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. If I should live another day, I pray the Lord to guide my way. There are a few of us in the audience this morning, if any, who have not said that little prayer or heard it said by one of our boys and girls. I want us to think about that prayer this morning based upon some scriptures taken from the third and fourth Psalms, Psalms that you were reading just a few days ago. In Psalm 3, verses 5 and 6, I'd laid me down and slept. I waked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. And then over in the fourth chapter, verse 4 says, stand still in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. And then at verse 8, I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety. I suppose that if people were honest with themselves today in making a list of some of the most valuable concepts in life, that not far down that list would be a peaceful night's sleep. There are so many people who just don't know what that is. There are those who have a lot of this earth's goods who would give thousands of dollars to be able to go to bed at night and to go to sleep and to sleep in peace and to arise the next day rested and ready to go about the day's activity. It is a bit disturbing to hear some of our boys and girls say, I can't go to sleep at night. Indicating that there is some kind of worry, some kind of problem that hinders them from being able to go to bed and close their eyes and go to sleep in peace and rest, be able to get up the next day if the next day comes. Perhaps we need to pause and consider this a moment. During the last few weeks, several of the lessons which we have brought have been lessons to emphasize the assurance that we have in God. You remember we talked about the statement that Job made, I know that my Redeemer lives. We also looked at that passage in Romans 8 that asked the question, if God be for us, who can be against us? And then followed with a series of questions that answer themselves, sort of summarizing in the answer that there isn't anything that can really separate us from the love of God. I think we know that, but I'm not for sure that we really believe that. It may be that we need to learn to accept the assurance that God has given, to really believe the promises that he's made and talk about our acceptance of that as much as to prove that it's there and to reemphasize in our thinking that God is there and that he has everything in his hands. And then also associated with this is the fact that sometimes one of the reasons that we are not able to pillow our heads at night in the peace that passeth understanding is because we've not made the proper provisions to be able to really lie down and sleep with our trust in God and our lives right and ready. One little boy went in to go to bed and knelt beside his bed. He began the prayer that we use to begin the lesson today. His mother was watching from the door to his room. He bowed his head and said, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, and he stopped. After pausing for a few seconds, again he said, if I should die before I wake, in softer tones. And again he stopped. He got up from the side of his bed and went into the other room and was gone about a minute or two and came back and knelt down beside his bed and continued, "If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take." When he'd finished, his mother said to him, "Son, I don't understand. Why did you stop your prayer in the middle of it?" And he said, "When I got to that statement, if I should die before I wake, I remembered that I had messed up some of the toys of my brother in the other room, and I just got to thinking, if I were to die before I wake, I did not want those toys like that. And so I went and straightened up those toys and came back and finished my prayer." I think that little boy preached a greater sermon than I'll preach this morning. There was a doctor who was a Christian, faithful member of the church. He was known for taking care especially of visiting preachers who were in the area where he lived. And on this particular night, as he had a gospel preacher in his house as a house guest, after they had sat and talked for a little while, the doctor said to the preacher, "Excuse me for just a few minutes." He went over to his desk and sat there for a little while, doing some work on the desk, finished, and came back and sat down again with the preacher. He said, "You may wonder why I excuse myself for a few minutes, but although you do not know it, I'm living with a rather severe heart ailment. And it is possible that any night that I go to sleep that I will not awaken the next morning." Of course, we all know that's possible, but maybe to him he could have used the word probable. And he said, "Every night before I go to bed, I go to my desk and I review my business affairs and my family affairs, and we try to keep everything in order so that if something were to happen to me during the night, my wife will know what to do with these affairs." And I rather imagine that that doctor also had in mind keeping his affairs with God in order. I think those two little stories illustrate what I want us to really see this morning. That there is a sense in which we need to be able to go to bed tonight with a relaxed feeling of protection. Another sense in which we need to be able to go to bed tonight with a feeling of preparation, spiritually speaking. And yet another feeling that ought to be there of expectation if there is another day and if we live to see the light of another day. That's really what's in those three little verses of that little prayer. "Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep." Is there anything that is more pleasant and peaceful than to know that we have that anchor of the soul that we sang about a moment ago? Hebrews 6:19 says that hope is the anchor of the soul. To be able tonight, whether it's those of us that are adults or whether it's you boys and girls that are just old enough to understand a little bit about Jesus and about God and about praying to God, whether it's one who's older or one who's younger, it is worth so much to be able, at the end of a day's labor, in the darkness of the night, to pillow one's head in peace that passeth understanding with the hope which is the anchor of the soul, anticipating a good night's rest with everything in the hands of God, trusting in Him and not trusting in ourselves, believing that God does have the whole world in His hands, and believing that because we are Christian people, we are His children, that He'll take care of us. I don't know that I can understand and explain why it is that those who should be the closest to God sometimes are the ones who seem to have the least amount of peace. I don't know why that's true. Maybe it's because we've not put things in proper focus and realized how we ought to be able to be at peace and to go to bed at night and be at peace and anticipate a good night's rest. Part of it could be that we've not made the right preparation. Maybe some of us need to get up off our knees and go back and straighten up some of those toys or other things in life that needed to be made right, or that need to be made right. It may be that one of the reasons that we cannot have that kind of peaceful rest that we so much desire at night is because we did not make the right kind of preparation before we went to bed to sleep. We need to keep our affairs in order. It was to King Hezekiah that God sent the message, "Set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live." God permitted that king to have 15 years added to his life. But is there not a sense in which each one of us should live with that attitude? Oh, I don't mean expecting to die any moment, but realizing that death can come at any moment, that death could come in the evening, in the restful hours of the evening, even while we're asleep. And because of that, we need to have everything right and ready. This is true from a business standpoint. A Christian is to live an honest life with integrity in his dealings with other people, Romans 12:17. He is to take care of his debts and responsibilities, Romans 13:8, saying, "Owe no man anything but to love one another." He is to work with fairness and dedication, even on the job, with the master-servant relationship, with mutual respect where everything is in order. We need to keep our business lives ready. Not unlike that doctor who each night said, "I try to see that all my business affairs are in order." We ought to keep our business affairs in order. We may not be able to bring up the tally sheet completely at the end of every day, but we at least ought to know in which direction that sheet is going. And know that we have lived in an honest way with our employees or employers or competitors or whatever the case may be, to where everything is in order from a business standpoint. Even the man who may own a great deal of this earth's goods will not have to lie awake worrying about them if he has them in order. This is true as far as family relationships are concerned. Should we go to bed at night after having had an argument in our families without sitting down and talking those things through and praying about them? I think not. It doesn't mean that we'll be able to solve everything that needs solving within the day, but we ought to be able to at least solve it to a mutual understanding, to where there is forgiveness, if forgiveness is needed, and at least understanding of each other. One of the heartiest funeral services that I ever conducted was several years ago in Clarksville, Tennessee. It was a service for a 19-year-old married man whose wife, now widow, and little girl were sitting on the front seat in that funeral home. He and his wife had had a serious argument. He ran out of the house, jumped in the car, took off at a high rate of speed, and had a wreck and killed himself. The last thing that that wife remembered about her husband that was now dead was the argument that they had before he jumped in the car and left. I don't know what that argument was about. I don't know who was right and who was wrong, who was at fault. But I know one thing. That young woman will probably never forget that day, and it's something that cannot be corrected after that. That's a drastic case, but the point is well made. We need to have our lives right with each other within the family. We need to have our lives right with each other in the church. When there's a misunderstanding, God teaches both the offender and the offended to work to go toward each other, Matthew 5:23-24 and Matthew 18:15-20. And everything that's said in those areas is the idea of you get things right with each other, at least understand each other. And I think that's about the same thing that's being said there in Ephesians 4 when he says, "Let not the sun go down on your wrath." That just sort of fits into the framework of what we're talking about today, doesn't it? Don't let the sun go down. Usually we let the sun go down before we go to bed at night to rest. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Take care of those things, at least to where there's a mutual understanding of each other. And at least to where you understand that you're willing to work these things out and to give and take to work them out. And then there is the need of being right with God. I think I can understand a little bit why some people may have restless nights. I honestly admit to you this morning, if I believed that I had sin in my life that had not been forgiven, I would not go to bed tonight and go to sleep in peace. I, like you, make mistakes, but I don't believe that those mistakes are continually against me, because as a Christian, I have the forgiveness from Jesus Christ through the power of His blood if I live as a humble, penitent child of God. And if I were in the condition of some of you that I know personally and pray about personally, I could not go to sleep tonight and pillow my head, because there are adults that are in this audience every Lord's Day who've not become Christians. And there are teenagers, some of them on up in their teens, who have been taught God's Word from day one, who have never obeyed the gospel. I don't see how some of you go to bed at night and sleep. I don't understand that. I don't believe I could. And yet, if we become Christians and we're living for Jesus Christ, we ought to be able to go to bed at night and pillow our heads in that restful, peaceful sleep, because we're prepared. And notice also in this passage, after he says, "I laid me down and slept," that he said, "I awoke, for the Lord sustained me." Like the Apostle Paul in Philippians 1, perhaps there are ways in which we see it would be better for us to depart and go on to be with God, but like he said there, it's far better that we remain, if it be God's will, and be able to continue to do His work. Certainly there's a sense in which we go to sleep at night that we go to sleep with the expectation of that sun rising the next morning, if it be God's will, and there being new challenges for us with God's help to meet. That's what's said in that last little verse of the prayer. If I should live another day, I pray the Lord to guide my way. It just simply means, folks, that we need to be able to go to bed at night with trust, a relaxed feeling that God will take care of us no matter what. That we need to be able to go to bed with a feeling of preparation, knowing to the best of my ability I've made things right in my business, with my friends, with my family, with my fellow Christians, with my God, and even with myself. And with a feeling of expectation, if it be possible for me to arise tomorrow to be ready to make that a new day, realizing it's another day the Lord hath made. If one can go to bed like that, he can have that peaceful rest, the value of which is so great. A farmer hired a new boy to work for him. And as he was talking to him, he asked him to give him his qualifications. And one statement the young man made sort of made the farmer wonder, but he didn't ask about it. The young man said, "I can sleep while the wind blows." A few days after the young man had been hired, in the middle of the night, there came up a great storm. The farmer went back to the room where the young man was sleeping, and sure enough, with all the thunder and lightning and wind and everything else, the young man was sound asleep. And he thought, "Now I understand what he meant. He can sleep through the storm." And he ran out. He said, "I'll bet he's not shut the doors, and he ought to be out there checking all of those." And the farmer ran outside and looked, and every barn door was shut. There had been a tarp put over the haystack, and it had been fastened down. He looked out in the pasture, and there wasn't an animal out there. They were all in the barn. Before the young man went to bed, knowing that the storm was probably coming, he put every animal in the proper place. He shut every door, and he did everything that he needed to do. And then he could sleep while the wind blows. You and I are living at a time in 1990 when there are storms around us. The wind of life is blowing, and sometimes it's hard to face all the things that come. But let me tell you something, folks. If we'll shut those doors and put all the animals and everything in the proper place and do what we should do to have everything right with our fellow man and with God and with ourselves, we can go to bed at night in the peace that passeth understanding, and we can sleep while the wind blows. And we can truly say, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. If I should live another day, I pray the Lord to guide my way. But I honestly believe that there are some of you that need to be baptized into Christ this morning or restored in order to be able to sleep in peace tonight. Won't you do that as together we stand and sing?